He said, let's get out of this town, drive out of the city, away from the crowds. I thought heaven can't help me now, nothing lasts forever. But this is gonna take me down. He's so tall and handsome as hell. He's so bad, but he does it so well. I can see the end as it begins. My one condition is, say you remember me.
Welcome again for the 2015 start of Sports Talk in the Berg, RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. This year, we are joined by a panel, not just one, not just two, well, tonight just two, but three other companions in this quest to bring you Sports Talk with me, Zach Lauffer, as always, your host. But this year, again, as I said, we have some newcomers, a couple freshmen, a couple sophomore, one sophomore, I mean. We're going to get through it. We're going to I'll run down how we're going to go through this. But let's just start by introducing ourselves. Go ahead, Ian.
I'm Ian Kiss, a sports comm major and sports management major here at RMU. And the thing I love in life is Pittsburgh sports.
So all right.
This works out perfect.
Colin?
My name is Colin Wilson. I'm a freshman at Robert Morris University. I'm a sport management major and hopefully plan on minoring in communications.
All right, sweet. Next week we will be joined by Sam Anthony, fellow freshman, journalism major. He's on a beat for the Century Media. Oh, before we dive into what we're going to be doing tonight and for the rest of the semester on Sports Talk in the Berg, want to mention for all you RMU football fanatics out there, I have a season preview of the 2015 season coming out either tomorrow or maybe tomorrow night or maybe Thursday morning. Trying to finish it out. Just got to throw it all together. I don't want it to look bad. So anyway, that's just a food for thought, and that's just something to look forward to for tomorrow. So unlike last year, with me talking the whole time and Dylan muttering in every now and then about some technological kind of thing, what we're going to be doing here is sort of like a round table, where sort of like around the horn, if you've ever seen that, where the host, that's me, asks a question. You can always throw in your answers as well at home. Except today we don't have the phone number because we just moved into a new studio. So we will have the phone number for you next week. But for now, you can just hit me up on Twitter at Zach Lauffer. Or if any of you want to chime in, you that's what we're here for. And I will be we won't determine a winner at the end like Around the Horn does, but we'll be all right.
We're all winners.
We're all winners. That's what
well,
that's
good thoughts.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So, let's just dive right in. Let's talk about the Steelers. Martavis Bryant, Le'Veon Bell, Marquise Pouncey, and the kicker situation. In your opinion, what is the biggest factor? Let me phrase it this way. What is the biggest problem the Steelers have to overcome this season? Go.
Honestly, I think it would be Bryant. Last year, 549 receiving yards in only 10 games on 26 catches. I mean, that's impressive. That's impressive numbers that you have to replace for four games this year, especially a big one at New England, first game on a Thursday. So they may have known about the issue with Bryant beforehand going into the draft. That's why people have looked into in the draft. They got Sammy Coates,
right,
a playmaker out of Auburn, known for that, known for big plays down the field. And also they had Darius Heyward-Bey only utilized in three catches last season, but Roethlisberger anticipates a bigger role for him this upcoming season. A seven-year vet, I'm out of Maryland, played some time in Oakland, definitely could see some down-the-field catches.
So do you think that the Steelers knew about Bryant's impending suspension before the draft?
I do. I think that's exactly why they went out and got Coates. I mean, that's tough to plan for. I mean, a loss like that, and then right. You go and get a guy like Coates, a big playmaker, especially in a receiver-friendly draft like 2015 was.
All right, I'll say something about that after we hear from Ian. Go ahead, Ian.
Yeah, I agree with Colin said. Martavius Bryant thinks the biggest loss for the first four games. Yeah, we lose – Steelers lose Bell, but I think that is – it's only for two games, and I think they'll be fine. I think you'll see Ben throw the ball more often, especially being in New England. I think they really want to get that W, obviously, and unsure if Tom Brady will be on the field. It's looking like he probably won't be because one of his games that he'll have to sit up will be game one. But, yeah, I think Martavius Bryant will definitely, because then you take another guy, a long pass receiver away from Ben, so all he's left with is his Brown.
I'll say this. Bryant, last year, without Bryant, the Steelers' offense was awful. I mean, they relied so heavily on Bell and Brown that opposing defenses could just double-team, stack the line with seven up front, and then worry about double-covering Brown because Wheaton wasn't really a threat, and Heath Miller wasn't doing anything much. But then once they implemented Bryant into the rotation of wide receivers, I guess you could say, he had a Mike Wallace effect where he could take the top off the defense. The first game he played, he got a touchdown on the first catch he had as a Steeler. That was a sign of things to come. And when I guess I would say that that's probably the biggest factor and the biggest problem that they have to face. But, I mean, I think everyone takes Sean Sweason for granted. Like, he only missed two field goals last season. He's only missed, and the only field goals that he missed were from outside 50 yards. So he was perfect from inside 49 yards, and that's huge at Heinz Field. It's huge everywhere now with the extra points being moved back. So once he went down, and then Garrett Hartley again after showing the Steelers that he can actually do something, he went 4 for 4. In the preseason game before he pulled his hamstring, and then they had to go get Josh Scobie from the Jaguars. I think, especially with teams deciding more based on how good their kicker is, whether they should go for one or go for two after scoring a touchdown. If the Steelers' offense scores a lot of touchdowns, I don't know how much confidence they're going to have in Scobie right off the bat because there's only one preseason game left. Who knows why the Jaguars would even let him go? He was their second kicker, but I still think that not being able to have confidence in your kicking game is a huge part of being. Having an elite kicker and having a bad kicker is a main difference between being a playoff team, a Super Bowl team, and middle of the pack. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong. The Bell and Bryant situation is very bad. One thing, like you said, that they knew about this coming up because the suspension, because I was reading an article before, and it mentioned that in order, under the new drug policy, I guess you could say, for the NFL, only after four failed drug tests can you get suspended for four games. Which begs the question, A, did the Steelers know about it ahead of time? B, how dumb is Martavis Bryant? And C, why the Steelers didn't do anything about it when they knew he already had three positive tests. Because they tell the NFL, they tell the teams this. And if they didn't know, or it would be worse if they knew and they didn't do anything. Because what kind of franchise are you if you just let your players get suspended, knowing that it's going to hurt you, knowing that it's not going to help? I just don't get it. Oh, boy. Those Steelers. But that Talking about suspensions, let's move into the Tom Brady situation real fast. Tom Brady, again, after the Deflategate situation, has been in federal court the past couple weeks, appearing in front of a judge, in front of a jury, and he was notable for that that sketch drawn about him that made him look about 150 years old.
And the other one was better.
Yeah,
yesterday's was better.
Yeah, and then yesterday they redid the drawing, and it made him actually look like he's a real human being. But nonetheless, he's still fighting this. Uh-huh. And the judge said, I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was something like along the lines of a decision isn't imminent, and he's not buying Tom Brady's denial of involvement.
Yeah.
What are your opinions on Tom Brady getting any kind of reduction on his suspension, Ian?
Cheating's cheating in my eyes, and I don't think they're going to prove that he didn't do it. They asked for his cell phone, mm-hmm. and if he had nothing to hide on his phone, then why didn't he? I know it's a big thing, like, it's my phone, it's my privacy, but in this situation, something that could prevent you from missing four games,
right.
the type of quarterback he is for right. his team, then I would do anything. If I was in his shoes, I would do anything to prove to the judge and the investigators that I had nothing to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
But I did hear something yesterday saying that the judge was on his side, like when he was talking.
On Tom Brady's
side. Yeah, on Tom Brady's side. And he was like saying, like, I'm not making fun of Goodell in the NFL, but like you could tell that he may not side with and may side with Tom Brady in this case.
Colin?
My first reaction of the four-game suspensions was that it was a little harsh. I always compared the deflating of footballs as similar to stick'em on gloves mm-hmm. as receivers, and that is banned. But I thought it was a kind of a ticky-tacky penalty for four games.
Right.
But he was given the four-game suspension. I can see that being withheld. But again, I go back to my my initial reaction of four games being a little harsh.
Mm-hmm.
I understood that, you know, I can see a suspension being given out of 1 to 2 games, but my initial reaction was four games was a little bit too harsh.
I will definitely agree with that. When the news came out that he was suspended for four games, I immediately thought, Goodell, you screwed up again, because.
Agreed, yes.
If he would have gone on the record and said, "Look, Tom, I know that you probably didn't do it with the intent of cheating. That's just how you like your footballs. But you definitely did do it. You didn't cooperate with the investigation, and I'm going to suspend you 2 games." If there would have just been a 2-game suspension, I feel like both Brown. Or both Brady and the New England Patriots as a whole, they would have just accepted it, and
it wouldn't have gone to this.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't have come to a court case. It wouldn't have come to dragging the NFL's name through the mud.
Mm-hmm.
It would have just been.
I mean, it's been a big distraction all off season.
I mean, everyone's being asked about it, not just on the Patriots. Like everyone around the league, the Steelers. That's all they talk about on ESPN. That's okay. That's all you hear now is what's going on with the Tom Brady case. It's like the O.J. Simpson trial all over again, except it's way less
intense.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, talking about a court case about deflating footballs is stupid.
Completely agree. Yes.
But regardless, we're talking about it because it's a big deal, especially
definitely,
especially since the Steelers. Have to play New England Week 1, and if they have to play without Bell, they have to play without Pouncey, they have to play without Bryant, they're going to need all the help they can get.
Definitely.
And if that means Tom Brady staying suspended for 4 games or at least 2 games, so be it. Because the way that we'll talk about their defense in a little bit, the way that their defense has looked throughout these first couple preseason games under new coordinator Keith Butler. Not liking the looks of being able to hold anyone under 30 points per game because they couldn't even stop the Bills. Yeah. So that's all I'll say. Oh, better yet, they couldn't even stop the Jaguars. Well, that's all I'll say about that. We're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Steelers restructuring some deals for Antonio Brown and other players alike to save some cap room. And we'll talk about their porous defense, and then we'll switch into some Pirates coming up a little later on Sports Talk in the Berg, RMU Radio, your campus, your voice.
Oh, there's levels to your love, and I keep on climbing up.
Real quick before we jump in to more Steelers stuff, we were talking about the Deflategate thing, and I just saw this on ESPN. From the Houston Texans, owner of the Houston Texans, Bob McNair, said Tuesday that his team's biggest star, being J.J. Watt, wouldn't destroy evidence such as Tom Brady did with his cell phone, an act that, quote, escalated the situation. So there's that. Apparently J.J. Watt wouldn't be as stupid as Tom Brady and destroying his cell phone. Probably a bigger reason. Again, if he wouldn't have destroyed the cell phone, if he wouldn't have not been cooperative with the investigation, he wouldn't have gotten a suspension at all. But that's neither here nor there. We've already talked about that. Like I said, let's talk more about the Steelers. Michael Vick. He's caused so much backlash for the Steelers already after being signed once Gradkowski went down with the injury against the Packers.
Yeah, Packers. 2 weeks ago.
Dog activists, animal activists, all kinds of activists are all up in arms about this guy who went to jail, was convicted of controlling an underground dog fighting ring, not just using the dog ring in his backyard, but like killing dogs, beating dogs, stuff like that. And this, like I said, the Steelers have received a lot of hate for this. My question is, and now the fans are actually starting a petition to get the Steelers to remove him from the roster. This is a two-parter. I guess, okay, let's just play a little buy or sell. We'll do an around the horn kind of thing. Buy or sell the Steelers accepting the petition of the fans and removing from the roster. Colin.
Sell. I believe it's the organization's concern on that. Obviously, they felt that he would be a good addition to the team. He's been with the Eagles and the Jets since the conviction. So he hasn't had any prior issues since. he's contributed to both of those organizations, and the Steelers feel as if he could be a good backup. Obviously, saw in the preseason game, play well, I mean, with a flick of a wrist, can throw a 63-yard football,
right.
And that's what they're looking for, a guy that can come in behind Roethlisberger and contribute, a guy that's a veteran in the league.
Ian?
Got to be a sell because those up to 20,000 fans now.
Yep.
They signed that petition.
Yep.
They're not real friends. They're not real fans if they don't understand why the Steelers made the decision to bring Vic to the team. They had to go out and get a. They didn't feel comfortable in Landry Jones stepping up to the second spot of quarterback, so they had to go get a guy available, and that happened. Best on the list was Michael Vick, and I know it's some people have hard times putting his past behind him for what he did. It was a horrific decision, but he does regret that, and now he's an animal activist, and he's trying to forgive his sins a little bit.
Just playing devil's advocate, some people would say that even though he's an animal activist now, that those activist ideas, the things that he does, the community service that he does for the animal community isn't genuine. How would you respond to that?
I think people don't think it's genuine because he's only doing it because he's trying to get people back on his side. But if he's – you could tell who's a true animal activist if they just do occasionally volunteer and voice their opinion. That he's been active with his thoughts now, and you can just tell he deeply regrets his decision.
And I think it's important that the fact that he served his time, right? I mean, I was listening to 937 The Fan the other day, and these people the day after he got signed. These people were just absolutely horrified that the Steelers would sign a convict onto their roster. I mean, it really made me angry. I wanted to call in, but I didn't. I restrained myself. I didn't call in. It's just you gotta. These people, I don't think realize who they'd been cheering for. Then if they're worried about people being convicts on the Steelers, because you got Roethlisberger allegedly raped a woman. He didn't serve any time. He got a suspension. Steelers fans love him. They don't think twice about putting on a number 7 jersey and going to the Steelers game downtown. James Harrison, he allegedly domestic violence hit his wife. No one questions wearing a 92 jersey going to see the Steelers. So. And I think it speaks to the level of the twisted reality that everyone lives in, really, because that just means that we put dogs, animals, but especially dogs, on a higher level of importance to keep safe than humans, and that's a problem. That is a serious problem. People don't even think about it. Like if you think about someone hurting your dog, I guarantee you'd cringe, right?
Yeah.
That's what people are thinking. But this, at the same time, if you were married and someone talked about hitting your wife, wouldn't you say it would be a lot more? It would be a lot more painful to you, because I don't think people even think about it like that. They just think, oh well, who would hurt a little dog? Who would make a dog fight? But the point, they're not hiring his baggage. They are hiring his talents to help back up Ben Roethlisberger on the field.
And I think a lot of people have put the Ben and James Harrison thing behind them because they win them games.
Right.
Ben always steps up Harrison. He's getting older, but he still has his skills. Wait until Michael Vick wins us a game somehow. They put him in or something. Or wait until he has to go into the game when Ben goes down and see how he performs and see if people still dislike the decision then.
People will still call in and say, you know what, he might have won us that game, but he still beat up dogs. And then the like if someone called in here and said that, I honestly wouldn't know what to say, because you can't reason with people. People like to hate something.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get a chance to be in a group and unanimously hate someone, people can't resist. They honestly can't resist hating something, even though they know there's something more important to hate. It's just the fact they have a chance now to be mad at something. Do you want to say something, Colin?
No, I mean, I completely agree with what you guys are saying. He's just doing a part for the organization. They're not hiring his baggage, like you said. They're just hiring a guy that they think can contribute if need be. He's backing up Ben as a veteran QB. He's been in film rooms before. He understands the game. And, I mean, that's what they're hiring. They're not hiring, you know, his convictions.
Yeah, I guess this story probably won't go away, because people will still say, forget Mike Vick, get him out of here throughout the season, because people were saying that they're gonna boycott the Steelers just because he's on the sideline. it would be one thing if they were signing him to be a starting quarterback.
Yeah.
And even still, he's been in the league now again for 5 years since he served his time. This isn't the first team. This isn't the second team he's been on. This is the third team. So, and again, he'll be on the bench wearing a hat come game day. So if people really don't want to go to the game because of one guy on the bench wearing a hat or wearing a headset, maybe, you know what? They can give their ticket to me. I'll go. I'll go watch, because I haven't been to a Steeler game in a while. I would love to go. I would love to just take their ticket. So be my guest. But anyway, the Steelers just announced today, a couple hours ago, that they restructured their star wide receiver, Pro Bowl receiver Antonio Brown, restructured his deal a little bit for the next 2 years. Basically, from what I've seen, it's only a $2 million raise for this year and next season. So, and that is nowhere near what Brown wanted. Brown threatened to hold out, and he did not. So, which led me to believe that they were going to have a long-term deal by the end of camp. Looks like this is just a short-term Band-Aid. The article goes on to say that Brown is now set to make 6.25 this 2016 and 8.71 in 2017. So, after next offseason, they expect him to hold out again, because, I mean, everywhere you read, people are calling him one of the best receivers in the NFL. And obviously, with Calvin Johnson, Dez Bryant getting their deals, he's gonna want one of those deals up in the $15-16 million.
Got rated number 10 on ESPN's top 10 NFL players.
Right. He's gonna want to get paid like those guys. If he doesn't get paid like those guys, he'll walk and go to a team that will pay him like one of those guys. So they also reworked the contracts, it says, of Heath Miller and Sean Sweezum, who, again, is injured reserve, torn ACL, out. But Heath, they used the contract restructures of Miller and Sweezum to make the room for Brown's $2 million raise. But that it looks like just a short-term fix for that. What are your thoughts on keeping Antonio Brown long term, no matter the cost, Ian?
They definitely need him, mm-hmm. but if he's going to hold out, do the Steelers really want to deal with that? I think they should for a little bit, but like I always call players that hold out, like sometimes I understand what they're coming from, but I think sometimes they do it just to be childish about it. Like Maurice Jones-Drew a couple years ago, I think that was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And I always bring up the point that they're still making a ton of money, like a lot more than I'm going to be making in my lifetime, that they make in a single season sometimes.
Yep.
And I find it like sometimes childish that they complain instead of getting like $16 million, they're only getting sometimes $12 million, which I would obviously anybody would take any day. But they definitely are going to have a situation on their hands. But at least he's the type of player that if he holds out and misses a good bit of preseason, or sometimes they miss all of preseason when they hold out, he's not going to miss a beat. Because he'll stay active, he'll stay fit, and he knows the playbook, unless that changes for some reason.
Right.
If Todd Haley leaves or something, never know. But yeah, they need to try to get him, but with the cap the way it is, big players are going to ask for money, and sometimes teams can't give it to them.
Colin?
Now, like what you said, Dez Bryant and Julio Jones just signed long-term deals, and I definitely think Antonio Brown should be up there. I mean, what he's done the past couple seasons, it's just been remarkable. You definitely need to lock up a guy like that on your roster, especially you have Big Ben for the rest of his career, mm-hmm. as long as nothing goes haywire.
But how far are you willing to go dollar-wise to get him? Because they don't have any cap room right now. That's the problem with cap in the NFL, because you have these skilled position players that if you want to keep them together, you got to keep retooling, I think. I think the Seahawks have done that better than anyone else in the league. That's why they've been to the Super Bowl twice in the last 2 years, because they draft, they develop, and then they just ride their guys until they get to their high-level contracts, and then they ship them off. So what do you think?
No, but I still think that you need to lock this guy up with the max contract, no matter how high it is. He's that kind of playmaker. He's going to be there for years to come too. He's a young guy, he's already proven that he's been there for Big Ben in many situations. So I definitely, no matter the cost, I think you need to lock this guy up, whether it be during the season, this season, or next year.
I think it. I agree. They need to restructure his deal. They need to get him locked up for at least 5 more years. It's just funny because a few years back, when Sanders and Brown mm-hmm. both were looking for deals, they gave it to Brown, yes. not Sanders, and then Sanders left. And Brown took that and ran with it. He turned into one of the best receivers in Definitely. The NFL. And he started as a sixth round draft pick in the draft. So I'm not saying that Antonio Brown just grow on trees and that they just fall to the sixth round.
No, I understand what you're saying.
But you could deal with a couple of guys to fill that void. I'm not saying that I would want that scenario to happen. Of course, I mean, Antonio Brown, again, one of the best wide receivers in the league. You don't want that to happen, but if push comes to shove, you can always draft guys that fit the Brown mold, that are fast, like a little shorter, good route runners, and that can make guys miss in the open field. So it's different. It would be different, I think, if we were talking about like a Calvin Johnson, because those come around like once in like 20 years or mm-hmm. so. They're like the 6'4", 225 pound, like 4'2", 40 guys. Those definitely don't come along very often. But a guy like Antonio Brown, with the right development, there can be a lot of someone like him. That's what we'll say about that. Well, this will be our last break of the show for today, and then when we come back, we'll transition, after talking about the poorest Steeler defense, we'll transition to some Pirates, and then we'll end the show with This Day in Sports History. Coming up on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice from Sports Talk in the Berg.
We have traveled land and sea, but as long as you are with me, there's no place I'd rather be.
Shut the batteries. place I'd rather be. Yeah.
You got me sipping on something I can't compare to nothing I've ever known. I'm hoping that after this fever.
Closing out the show here on Sports Talk in the Berg, first show of the year, Army Radio, your campus, your voice, with Ian Kist and Colin Wilson. I'm Zach Lauffer for today. Finishing talking about the Steelers, guys, their defense. Let's just talk about it for a second. It was bad. It's been bad. Has been good for since when? 2010, when they were in the Super Bowl against Green Bay. So we thought that first of all, the departure of Dick LeBeau would maybe help rookies get into the defense and produce faster, because it was always that notion that, oh, you know, Dick LeBeau's defense is so complicated that it takes guys a couple years to get used to the system, like we saw with Cam Hayward, Lawrence Timmons. All those guys took a couple years before they really developed and were able to produce on defense. So let's looking at their preseason schedule so far before they play their last preseason game, which none of the starters will be playing against the Panthers this Thursday to get ready for the Thursday night opener against New England. They are 1-3. They lost a Hall of Fame game to the Vikings 14-3, and then at Jacksonville lost 23-21, 19 points to the Packers, but they won. And then there was the blowout, 43-19 against the Bills that they suffered. So what's the biggest problem with the defense right now, Colin?
And I'm a firm believer that preseason doesn't exactly matter, but you'd expect a little bit more fire, I guess. I think Mike Tomlin described it as them as the walking dead in that game. You expect a little bit more fire in a preseason game, you know, so close to the season, especially the last one, the starters are going to see action. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the secondary was just picked apart. Fred Jackson, I mean, who was released by the Bills the following day or 2 days later, was broke a 40-yard run to start mm-hmm. the game. I mean, you just can't have that. It's I don't know if it's a lack of experience or just lack of talent. I mean, they've drafted guys like Jarvis Jones, hasn't really panned out. Hopefully Bud Dupree can turn into something, but mm-hmm. he's a raw talent as well. Mm-hmm. And their secondary is just kind of up in arms, and that has been for the past few years too. So you don't know. I don't really know what to think. I'm kind of seeing what New England, hopefully, you know, if Tom Brady doesn't play in that game, they have an experienced quarterback come in a national televised game.
Garoppolo.
So hopefully they can turn it on once the season starts, but, I mean, who knows? It hasn't looked promising.
Ian?
Definitely the secondary we've seen be weak in years past, and then a lot of people were surprised that safety Ian Wild was released, cut from the team, and, well, 13 players were cut yesterday because he also could play linebacker.
Yeah, especially in that
game. And you get a young secondary player and then show what he has and then cut him. I think a lot of people were surprised when that is one need that you definitely need on the team, especially the defense. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting because I think the defense, they let players go. In the secondary, having signed players, they've signed with different teams. So I think any quarterback can throw the ball deep and beat, and any wide receiver can beat our secondary
right now?
Yeah, I mean, right now, Bud Dupree is looking like he doesn't belong in the NFL. He's playing against the second team, third team offenses right now, and he's still not producing what they want. In the Green Bay game, the Cam Hayward after the game said after that opening drive that they went, 80-some yards and scored a touchdown, Aaron Rodgers did. They got mad. They got a fire. And on the next two drives, they forced a punt and then they forced the safety. And Bud Dupree was actually the one who got to the quarterback first, got to Rodgers first. But other than that, he has looked completely lost. Keith Butler has gone on the record as to saying that he is simplifying the playbook so these guys can grasp the concepts more fluently, faster, I guess you could say. And I think teams are picking on the fact that their safeties aren't very good because Keith Butler is trying to play with some different formations on defense. One of the ones they did against Buffalo was the Tampa 2, where you have the two safeties playing very deep, but then they would come in right as the play started. And as soon as the Bills saw that, they had that seam route to I think it was Clay down the middle for a tight end. Beat both safeties, beat both corners down the field, and scored a 50-yard touchdown. And it looked seamless. It looked easy for the Bills to just throw the ball right down the seam. Absolutely. And you can't have that against a professional defense. I know it's preseason. I know, but it still doesn't look good. There's nothing has shown me that they can be the defense that they once were, I guess you could say. I need to see more out of – definitely need to see more out of Shamarco Thomas to fill the void of Polamalu. Definitely need to see more of Antoine Blake and Brandon Boykin, who they just got from the Eagles. He's good as an inside corner, but he hasn't proven himself on the outside yet, and he needs to do that soon. I need to see more of Bud Dupree, obviously, and Jarvis Jones especially. Those two – could be the biggest busts the Steelers have had draft wise in the past decade. They're just not producing.
Yeah. I mean, they're in a division with AJ Green. I mean, that's just going to pick apart secondaries. Mm-hmm. They have Joe Flacco, who's an experienced quarterback that just can pick apart defenses like that. So they definitely need to get it figured out soon. I mean, you have to deal with those teams combined, four times a year between Baltimore and Cincinnati, so that's going to be rough.
Yeah. Well, hopefully after week one we'll have something nicer to say. But for now, the defense is in a state of disarray, I guess you could say. So we're switching gears now to the Pirates to end the show. The Pirates have been on a tear lately, but, so is the rest of the NL Central. So really – It's actually remarkable how well that all those top three teams have played, the Cardinals, the Pirates, and the Cubs. They've had, since the All-Star break, they've had the three highest win totals in the majors, those three teams, which is kind of unfair because two of those teams will be in the wild card, while you have teams like the Dodgers who are – Only a few games over 500, and yet they'll automatically be in the NLDS already. So the first question we want to ask is, do you think the addition of a second wild card team was a good idea or not? Or would you get rid of it if you were Commissioner Rob Manfred?
I do believe it was a good addition. It adds another team, especially for business. It adds another team to the playoffs, so you get more revenue. You get more viewership in that aspect. Plus, I don't know how I feel about the one-game format. It's almost – I mean, it is a playing game, but it's almost like the old playing game and everything. So I don't know how I feel about that, but I do like the addition of an extra team in.
Yeah,
but it is like you said. It is rough whenever you have or the three best NL teams in one division.
Right.
And, two of them have to play a one game series just to get in. While you have LA and New York with 73 wins. So
yes,
it's definitely rough, and that's where it's in its first few years of being involved. So definitely it can be reconstructed. Or
so like maybe like a 3-game series.
I could see that. I could definitely see that. Even a 5-game.
That's been debated.
Yeah, I would definitely lean towards a 3-game series. Definitely. Because I mean, they don't want to play more games than they already are. They already play 162 exactly. games. Yeah. The season's already long enough. But that's why. I'll let Ian if you want to say something real fast.
I mean, in baseball too, you have 3-4-game series, and then you're just gonna go one for a playoff game. Mm-hmm. Arguably, definitely a very important game.
Right.
And you're just gonna get a 1-game series when you've been playing 3-4-game series all year. I don't like that.
Ian.
Like one game, like we've seen the Pirates get blown out this season just because they haven't played well, errors right. and stuff. And now you're telling one of the best teams in baseball to play, and that you never like something could happen. They're off at least a 3-game series. They can bounce back and win 2 straight. Mm-hmm. But like you saw the when they had to play Cincinnati in their first playoff game in 20 yep. some years, they wanted it. Like they wanted to win that game. They knew they had to win that game to get the fans the. Still believe in them, but then we saw last year against the Giants and Bumgarner. I think they were exhausted.
Yep,
no offense. They're they had Edison Volquez on the mound because the way the rotation fell, and who ended up being a good pitcher last year for the Pirates. But I think players just get exhausted. And right now, I think the World Series is supposed to start October 27th.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it ends. It could end like November 1st. Usually now we're going to play well into November.
Right.
So and they start January, February. So I just think exhaustion sets in, and that a team like Pittsburgh, who is definitely a playoff team, may not even make. Yes, the one game wild card game is a. Technically making the playoffs,
right?
But a lot of people don't consider that the playoffs
because it's not the NLDS, yeah. the NLCS. It's not the real series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you don't make a series, people just count you off like you didn't even make the playoffs.
Exactly.
That's the one thing that I really do not like about this system is the one gamer. Like you said, like they play 3-game series all year. They play 3-game series for 5 months, 5 months of the year, and then you're telling them, all right. Either you win this game, or you go home.
Exactly.
It doesn't really make any sense. So to counteract that, because the fatigue and exhaustion have to set in once you get into the dog days of September. That's why they have the roster expansion, and we're going to talk about that in a minute or two. That instead of playing 162 games and just leaving the 1-game wild card in, I would. If I was the baseball commissioner of the MLB, I would shorten the season by a whole month. So after once August hits, then you'd have a 3-game series for the wild card teams to get into the NLDS, 5-game series, and then the championship series 7-game, World Series 7-game, and you'd be done by the end of September, early October, and then at least you would save a month. You'd save a whole month of baseball. You'd save a whole month of players for their careers. And then you wouldn't have to pay them as much money because you'd save money as a franchise. You'd save money as a fan for buying these tickets because it's a whole month of baseball gone. It just it's hard to – because baseball is the most advanced sport when it comes to stats, right? So – You look at all these stats from the whole season, like if McCutchen bats 330 for a whole season, and then in the wild card game he can go 0-for-4 and they'd lose.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you see pitchers. It just wasn't my day, and that's accepted in baseball. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have right. guys that win the Cy Young have 7 losses on the season. They lost 7 times, and they probably had a lot of no decisions.
Yes.
I mean, so to make it all in one game, I don't think that's fair. Necessarily, and I think it should at least be a 3-series,
yeah.
a 3-game series.
Okay, so again, like we said, the Pirates have been on a tear lately. The Cubs have been on a tear. Same as the Cardinals. The Cardinals seem like they won't lose more than one game in a row at a time for about like a week and a half, and then they'll lose one.
Yeah.
But in that now the Pirates are going into a 9-game road trip. They just came off of a pretty awful. Loss against the Rockies, shut out 5-0 on Sunday. Against a lefty, And that's something worth mentioning, that the Pirates still continue to struggle against left-handed pitchers who can locate that don't necessarily throw high heat, because they hit the fastball better than any other team in baseball, but they are not as patient as they were last season. And I think that's costing them when they're up against left-handed hitters, or left-handed pitchers, rather. So this nine-game series involves at Milwaukee, starting tonight against Cole, with Gerrit Cole. They haven't played well against the Brewers at all, let alone in Milwaukee. And then at St. Louis, everyone knows how the Pirates play against them, especially in St. Louis. They're only 1-5 already this season against the Cardinals in St. Louis. And then at Cincinnati, again, same thing as the Brewers. They struggle in Cincinnati. They got swept in Cincinnati to start the season. And you have to go into Cincinnati and at least take away 2 of 3, I think. So to close the gap that the Cardinals have on the Pirates, and as it currently sits, well, I think it's, four and a half?
Yeah.
And to close this gap, they're going to have to come out of this road trip at least 6-3, which means 2 out of 3 for every series. And if they don't, that's going to put a lot of pressure on the whole roster, but especially the starting pitchers. The starting pitchers have been okay for the majority of the season, but they need to continue that. So they just had the deadline of roster expansion, and they called up Elias Diaz, but they didn't call up Tyler Glasnow, who was their top pitching prospect. He's dominated AAA hitters in the short time he's been in AAA. So do you think that not calling up Glasnow was a mistake, Ian?
Clearly they saw something that they didn't want him up. But, you know, they brought back a lot of their guys that have seen time this year. Like Lafferboise.
Yeah, Lafferboise.
And then Casey Sadler. And did I read it right that Jameson Taillon?
Yeah, Jameson.
Got the call, so he's up.
Jameson Taillon is—he had Tommy John surgery before the season.
Mm-hmm. So I think they're trying to use guys that have seen the mound already this year with the team.
Yeah.
But if it's going to be a mistake, if Glasnow should be, like, if his stats are good enough to be up here, but maybe because he's only short time in AAA, they don't want him up here yet. But because the bullpen has struggled a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they have Soria. If Melanson struggles closing things out, if Watson, they have, like, I consider three good eighth inning guys, and Hughes, Soria, and Watson. I think they may have should have brought up Glasnow. But we'll see if they'll regret that decision or not.
I mean, Huntington has gone on the record and said that he doesn't like to bring up pitchers too early. Because, one, you'd lose a year of arbitration.
Yeah.
And, two, you would maybe – you want him to get more experience down in AAA before bringing up to face major league hitters. But maybe that wasn't the right move, Colin.
In baseball, you see it every year. I mean, he was drafted in 2011, but guys need time in the minors to kind of, you know, find themselves and transition into the game of Major League Baseball. They've been doing fine with pitching, in my opinion, this season. Obviously, you know, they're in the hunt of a playoff. I mean, basically have all but clinched a playoff berth. It's just a matter of chasing the Cardinals right now. I really don't think they should bring up a rookie, and especially in a situation where they're fighting for a playoff spot, or the playoff spot that they will receive. I think it'd be too much on his shoulders right now for him to kind of get his rookie debut in the middle of a big race like this, especially in El Central. So I think it can wait till next season. You get him a little more experience in the minor leagues. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm always, he's only 22 years old. Mm-hmm. He has many years left in the tank, so. I don't think it's a necessity to bring him up right now.
Okay. Yeah, I completely agree. I don't think they should have brought him up either. I do think they should have brought brought back Radamez Lee's, because that when he converted into a starter this season in the minors, he pitched AAA hitters like Glasnow has dominated them in the same kind of way. All right, but to close the show, we only have a couple. We have like 1 minute. Real quick, the Cardinals are 5 games up on the Pirates. Pirates are 5.5 up on the Cubs. Where do you see those three teams finishing? Division winner, wild card one, wild card two, or no playoffs? Ian.
Cardinals division winner, and then Pirates wild card one and Cubs wild card two.
So as it stands.
Yeah, I think it's going to stay. Both teams, all three teams showing that they're not going to stop, so.
Colin?
I like it. Yeah, same as it stands. I mean, Pirates went 19-8 in August and only game one game on the St. Louis Cardinals. I mean, that's just tough to do. Their pitching's phenomenal. So, and I mean,
they're 39 games over 500 right now.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, yeah. Especially with injuries they've had. So I see it happening the way it is right now. And you know, you see Pittsburgh and Chicago in a wild card game.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I agree. Because now that they're 5 back, the Cardinals just keep on winning. There's no stopping them, it looks like. So
they're going to go.
I mean, they came back a little bit before the All-Star break, and the Pirates were only 3.5 back.
4 was big.
Yeah, and they were only 2.5 back, and everyone said, oh, man, they're gonna catch them. They're going to take the division. And then right after the All-Star break, the Pirates lose 5 of 6. And right after that, as soon as – before you can blink your eyes, they're down. They're back 6 again. So it's like they take 2 steps forward, they take 4 steps back. They can't make up the ground in enough time. There are only 33 games left. It looks like counting tonight. So 33 games, five back. You'd have to win 10 more than the Cardinals. That's pretty rough. That's pretty tough. I'll definitely give the Pirates the first wild card again for the third consecutive year.
Third time's a charm.
Third time's a charm to actually go far. I mean, they have the players now. Before they got there on mainly writing starting pitching, but now they have the bullpen depth. They have the starting pitching. They have the depth on the bench now with Mercer and Harrison and Gong and
Polanco's
Ramirez.
Polanco's. I mean, that outfield is just tremendous.
And you have your infield: Ramirez, Mercer, Walker, Jay-Hay, all with Jay-Hay playing multiple positions, and Gong. So they have what it needs.
Right.
It's just if they are going to do it or not. If they're going to have the will.
If they do catch the Cardinals, it'll be on the back of the offense. I'll say that right now. I mean, who knows? Maybe the Cardinals will lose 5 in a row and the Pirates will go 4-1. We'll be right in the middle of it. But that's yet to be determined. But, hey, great first show, guys. And look forward to having you guys and Sam for the rest of the semester.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was fun.
From RMU Radio's On Moon Campus, Zach Lauffer, Ian Kist, Colin Wilson, Sports Talk in the Berg. Good night from RMU Radio, your campus, your voice.